the Million Pound Radio Show, and here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
Good evening, thanks very much. Welcome to the new series of the Million Pound Radio Show. On tonight's show, our guests will be the SAS Synchronised Evidence Giving Team.
And we'll be playing Who's Baby with Sarah Ferguson. And she'll be having 28 attempts at identifying her own baby. And she gets bonus points if she can remember its name. So, tell me, Nick, what have you been up to since the last series?
Well, Andy, apart from touring the one-man show, I took a variety of jobs, actually.
Yeah, so the one-man show wasn't going very well then.
It's going very well, actually. Thank you very much, mm-hmm. Andy. The producers just felt it was time to recast.
Ah, right, yeah.
And anyway, I wanted to try a few other jobs, you know, mm-hmm. to deepen and broaden my life experience.
You mean you were temping again?
Yeah. At the Department of Health, actually, in planning.
Planning? Mm.
Consisted mainly of ringing up area health authorities and asking them what they could cut that wouldn't get too much press coverage.
Oh, right, yeah.
Office motto was, it doesn't matter what you do, as long as it doesn't make the front page.
Right.
And then last autumn, I got transferred to Edwina Curry's publicity department. Office motto, it doesn't matter what you do, as long as it does make the front page.
So, were you there during that egg crisis?
Yeah, I was, actually.
So what happened?
Well, I shouldn't really tell you this, Andy, because it's all very hush-hush, official secret, you know, but now this is strictly between ourselves, yeah?
Right, right, yeah, yeah, of course.
Well, firstly, Edwina Curry wasn't very popular.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, people were always trying to play tricks on her.
And what kind of tricks?
Oh, whoopee cushions, cling film over the toilet seats, buckets of water on the door, voodoo rituals, mafia hitmen, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And anyway, we're all down the pub one Friday lunchtime, and then suddenly someone had this brilliant idea. Let's write a press statement saying that all eggs contain high explosive. Show it to Edwina. She's bound to read it out personally because of the sensation value. And, well, it all built up from there.
So you mean she was set up to read out a completely fabricated story just to force her resignation?
No, no, no. What she finally said was actually basically true.
So she resigned for telling the truth?
Well, she had to. The Prime Minister felt it set a very dangerous precedent.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of course, it's been a very big year for you, hasn't it, Andy?
Certainly has.
Having the baby.
Yeah, that's right. I had a baby boy called Philip.
Nice name, Philip.
Yeah. But his full name is Philip Osgood Kerry Dixon Benetti Chopper Harris Hamilton.
You've named him after a whole lot of Chelsea players?
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet. Is he crawling or walking or what?
No, he doesn't move about much yet.
Oh, right, that's why you named him after Chelsea players. Is he sleeping?
Not really. Means I'm very tired, you know. I fell asleep for 2 hours on the tube platform last night.
Oh, no. Missed your train?
No, I was only asleep for 2 hours. I can't.
Do you find you've got into that sort of competitive parent syndrome?
No, that's silly. There's no point being competitive, you know. I mean, not when your baby is so much more advanced than any other child of his age. You know, why be competitive, you know?
You've been competitive now, Andy. This always happens. Parenthood, it softens people's brains.
No, you don't mean that.
I do, Andy.
No, you don't, Nick. I don't think you do. I don't.
I don't. I don't. No, I don't.
I don't think you mean that at all, Nicky, 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 Nicky. I don't think you do. You don't mean that. You don't. No. I don't think you do. You do. I don't think you do. You don't.
So it's not affected you then?
No.
Continuing our series looking at the home lives of incredibly interesting people with utterly absorbing jobs. This week, at home with a page three girl.
I'm home, Mum.
Hello, dear. Had a good day?
Not bad, yeah. This morning I did my pastry photo session where I dressed up in the jockey's gear, only with none of the buttons done up, but not showing any nipple, because that would be vulgar. Then I went to see my agent, who told me he wants to cultivate a good family image for me. The image, basically, of a girl next door.
A girl next door.
That's right. A girl next door who just happens to spend a lot of time with her breasts hanging out.
Oh, lovely.
And then he told me how he's guiding my career towards becoming an actress. Mm. And he's got a part for me in a film aimed mostly at the Middle East market. It's a character part, a romantic lead. I play a gym mistress who falls in love with a hockey team.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I think this film could put me on some big things. Then I had lunch with some other pastry girls. That was nice. We spent 2 hours criticising Samantha Fox's buttocks and comparing fiancés in the building trade. It was lovely. Then I went along to the motor show and lay on the bonnet of a car for 4 hours and tried not to look bored. And then I went across to the TV studio where I was appearing as a hostess in the game show, dangled my breasts over a washing machine and tried not to look bored. Oh, and I met Jim Davidson and tried not to look bored. And then we all went to Tramps and I got chatted up by George Best, who tried not to look bored. And then I went to the women's room and spent 2 hours looking in the mirror for wrinkles. And then I came home to my mum.
Yes. I wonder why it is that so many Page Three girls do live at home with their parents.
Well, do you know, Mum, I've often thought about that. And I suppose it's basically because we're too dim to live on our own.
Cup of tea, love.
I'll just take the varnish off my nipples and I'll be right with you, Mum.
Next week, at home with Roy Hattersley, who likes to unwind every night by writing the same article about his childhood in Sheffield.
Well, later we'll be looking at a major breakthrough in the field of chronic constipation. Sufferers are encouraged to imagine the consequences if something were to happen to George Bush.
And we'll be hearing about a major success for the Department of Employment, a 17-year-old youth who set himself up on an enterprise allowance scheme as an organ donor. Business was so good that by the end of the first week, he was dead.
And we'll be looking at the broadcasting revolution that is Sky Television.
I can receive Sky, actually, Andy. It's marvellous.
Yeah? Well, what sort of things run it?
Oh, a whole range of programming, you know, presented by people like Derek Jameson, Frank Bosch, Tony Blackburn, Keith Chegwin.
They've gone for all the really top talent then, haven't they?
It's a broadcasting revolution, frankly, Andy. Totally innovative programmes. You got Sale of the Century.
Oh, that's innovative.
Yes.
Yeah.
Keith Chegwin's hosting a talent show. Now, that is innovative. And Frank Boff sitting on a sofa talking to guests.
Well, that should be good, because Frank's always full of surprises, isn't he?
He certainly is. And then there's Norman Tebbit's new interview show.
Oh, sounds good.
It's called We Ask the Questions.
Just makes me want to dash out and buy a satellite dish right now.
That's right.
But more about Sky later. But with me now is Professor Gene Simpson, who's a scientist, monitoring the global warming of our planet. Now, Gene, perhaps you could explain some of the causes and effects of global warming.
Well, there is now concrete evidence that the Earth is getting warmer and that this is being caused by several factors, notably depletion of the ozone layer, global deforestation and the burning of fossil fuels. Now, the predictable effect of this warming in the short term is that sea levels will rise, immersing the Maldive Islands, much of Bangladesh, and partially inundating many coastal cities such as New York, London, Tokyo.
London, you say?
Yes, it's a frightening prospect.
Indeed it is. Now, which bits of London specifically would be flooded? I suppose logically it would be the bits nearest the river, would it?
Well, yes. Low-lying riverside areas and coastal plains would be most affected. But perhaps the most significant aspect is that...
So Putney Hill would be okay then, wouldn't it?
Sorry?
Putney Hill. The top end of Putney Hill, that would be okay. I mean, it's quite a steep hill, so it should be okay, shouldn't it?
Well, I suppose it would in the short term. But I think what's important about this prediction is that it should galvanise public opinion all over the world into realising just how deadly serious this situation now is.
Actually, I say the top end. It's more sort of two-thirds of the way up. Apparently, I've just passed B-Jams on the left, you know. We just bought this place. And I must say, look, our surveyors didn't mention any of this. You know, just a bit of woodworm under the stairs, he said.
Really?
Yeah, pathetic, isn't it?
Well, I do feel perhaps we could take a more global perspective on this subject.
Yeah, of course. I'm sorry.
A very important point is that these calculations assume that the rate of increase in global warming would remain roughly the same.
Right.
Now, if the increase was more dramatic, then we could be facing an apocalyptic climatic change which could threaten all life on the planet.
So it would affect Putney Hill then?
Well, quite possibly.
Quite possibly. Isn't that just typical of you scientists, right? You spend all day pushing white mice through mazes, yet you can't answer a simple question.
Oh, really?
Look, all I want to know is how will all this affect Nine Hilltop Rise Putney?
Look, that's... will you stop whittering on about Putney? We are talking about a global disaster here. Whole countries could disappear. Millions of people could die. I think it's a little small-minded of you to think purely in terms of where you live.
Fair enough. I take your point. What you're saying is that a much broader outlook is needed.
Exactly.
Where do you live then?
Well, I really don't see how where I live is particularly important.
Just out of interest.
Just not relevant.
What, is it low-lying land or what?
Well, if you must know, I live on a houseboat.
Oh, I see. So that's why it's not relevant.
Look.
What's this houseboat called? The I'm All Right, Jack.
Look, the point is...
There we'll all be, God knows how many feet underwater, and you'll be bobbing about in the Himalayas somewhere. Fishing for yaks.
The point is, it's a global issue that needs international action now.
How big's this houseboat?
What?
Can you squeeze another couple in, me and the wife, the baby? We'd pay our way, obviously.
Oh, I've had enough of this.
Well, that was Professor Gene Simpson on the danger of global warming.
Andy, how high is Naples?
What?
Well, I've booked my holiday next year for Naples, you see. I was wondering how high it was.
Oh, I don't know. Naples is marvellous.
Yeah?
You love it. Nestling in the shadow of Vesuvius there. Very impressive, Vesuvius is. And if you go to the remains at Pompeii, you can actually see the cast of the people who died when Vesuvius erupted.
That was a long time ago, though, wasn't it? When Vesuvius erupted. I mean, the volcano's extinct now, isn't it?
Well, it's dormant. It last erupted in 1943.
Vesuvius erupted in 1943?
Yeah, yeah. 1943 wasn't a very lucky year for the Italians,
no.
Really.
No. Still, I suppose the odds against Vesuvius erupting during my holiday must be astronomical.
Look, the odds against it must be a billion to one.
Right.
Mind you, that's what they'd have said at Pompeii.
What?
A billion to one shot, they'd have said. Hasn't erupted since records began, then bang! Pompeii's wiped out and Augustus Caesar's on the scene, promising an inquiry and praising the emergency services. And a terrible way to die, buried in ash, and then preserved for hundreds of years for American tourists to come and gawp at you and say, gee, Elmer, look, this guy was on the toilet. you're right, you've got to keep it in perspective. The odds are a billion to one.
Exactly.
Though, knowing your luck.
Sorry?
Well, you're not exactly lucky with holidays, are you? Like that time you went to Switzerland and got sick?
I was a bit poorly. I bet lots of people have got sick in Switzerland.
Yeah, but not with swamp fever. It was the only case they've ever had, Nick. Then there was the time you went to Jersey and got taken prisoner by that Nazi commando who'd been hiding in the woods for 44 years.
That was a bit unlucky, I grant you, yeah.
And then there was that flight from Lanzarote.
This is your pilot speaking. I'm afraid it will be a little while yet before we land, as the skies over Heathrow are quite busy and we're in a stacking mode. If you look out of the right-hand window, you can see a rather nice view of the River Thames. If you look out of the left-hand window, you'll get an excellent view of the cockpit of a 737. See the pilot waving at us there? Notice the quality of the rivets on the 737's fuselage.
And then, Andy, the wingtips actually touched and we just plummeted out of the sky.
Girl, that must have been terrifying. What thoughts went through your head?
Well, I can't remember, really. I was too busy trying to climb inside the black box, you know. Anyway, the pilot managed to sort of belly flop the plane down onto the Thames.
Oh, that was lucky.
Very lucky. Hitting the iceberg was less lucky. But somehow everybody on board escaped with just cuts and bruises, you know? Anyway, a few months later, I'm sitting at home, and suddenly...
Mr. Nick Revel?
Yes?
I understand you were involved in an accident some months ago, a forced landing.
Yeah, that's right.
My name is Harvey Kripker. I'm a compensation lawyer. I was wondering if I could offer you my services.
Oh, no, it's okay, thanks. I wasn't hurt. I've got no injuries at all.
Oh, don't worry. We can soon fix that.
Sorry?
If you'll let me sew your leg off, I can make you a very rich man.
So, it wasn't a lucky hole, really. Mm. And your next holiday is at the foot of Mount Vesuvius.
I'll cancel it in the morning.
I would. But now, a personal message.
Hi there, guys and chicks of the West. Mikhail Gorbachev here. You know, a lot of pretty nut things have been written about Soviet history, and the founders of our revolution have been depicted as a pretty ungroovy bunch of daddios. So, we have decided to tell it like it was. So get your heads around this.
Pravda Radio Productions present the official history of the Soviet Union. The year is 1917 and the father of the People's Republic, Lenin, is addressing the first meeting of a new revolutionary government.
Comrades! Comrades! These are dangerous early days for us. Our first priority must be to secure the revolution we have achieved. To this end, each of you has been allocated a crucial task. Comrade Trotsky.
Yes, Comrade.
You will take charge of our defenses. Comrade Ivanova, you will be in charge of transport. Comrade Vashinin will supervise the rebuilding of our industry. And finally, this is Comrade Zakharov, who will be in charge of marketing. So, let us begin. We have much to do.
Excuse me, Comrade. What do you mean, marketing?
Marketing? It's the secret of any successful new venture. One of the three golden M's. Manufacture, management, marketing.
But, Comrade, I think we are agreed that the priority of the revolution must be the mobilization of the proletariat.
Of course, Comrade. Nobody is disputing that. We must mobilize the proletariat. And it will say so on the T-shirts.
T-shirts?
And other leisure wear, including I have seen the Soviets of Moscow car stickers and sweatshirts featuring Bolshevik Badger.
Bolshevik Badger?
A cartoon character we have created to promote the revolution. He's really cute. You'll love him. He shares his den equally with all the other badgers. Isn't that right, Comrade Zakharov?
And another thing, who exactly is this Zakharov?
We've never even seen him before.
Oh, I'm sorry. Introduce yourself, Zakharov.
Team, great to be aboard. I'm Elmer Zakharov at Zakharov, Bleiberg & One, the best image consultants in the Big Apple. Give me some skin. Whoa!
You're not Russian, are you?
Not in the strictest sense of the word, no.
He's a capitalist.
He's a spy.
Comrades, these high-minded prejudices are a luxury our revolution cannot afford. We must be realists. We must be strong. We must be brave, and we must be organized. And to this end, I am sending you all on a management training course.
Management training course?
2 weeks in Guildford, human resource management and creative accounting.
You guys are going to learn how to go for it.
Now, may I speak freely, Comrade?
Fire away, Comrade. Let's run it up the flagpole.
2 weeks in Guildford. Is that what we have struggled for so long? Is this what men and women have died for, cut to pieces by the Tsar's cavalry? No! They died for a dream. And it is up to us to make that dream a reality.
They died for a dream. Comrade, your words sing the truth. Beautiful words. Poetic words. Words which would make an ideal lyric for the Kremlin's Christmas single.
Oh, really?
Eisenstein has already agreed to do the video. No argument. So, there you have it. How it really happened. Tune in next week to discover how Lenin wanted to privatize Estonia and discover Stalin's dynamic methods for motivating key personnel. All right, stay bright.
Andy, do you think I could have a word with you?
Sure, what's the matter, Nick? You look upset.
Yeah, yes, I suppose I have. I've got something on my mind, really, yeah. It's a bit of a problem. It's about me and Muriel.
What's sex again, is it?
How did you know?
Well, it's always sex, isn't it? I mean, it's an adequate. So what's the problem, anyway?
Well, it's just lately that, I don't know, she's been getting a bit kinky, you know? She's been making really sort of, I don't know, I mean, I like to think I'm a modern kind of bloke, you know, do what the other person wants, you know, if it turns them on, you know, but what she was asking, Andy, well, there are limits, aren't there? She wanted to make love instead of watching Match of the Day.
Oh, my God. I mean, she seems such a normal person.
I know, Andy, I know. I mean, you see, the first time...
You mean it's happened more than once?
Oh, yeah. The first time, Arsenal were on, so obviously it didn't seem completely unnatural.
Right, yeah. Well, look, have you sought any professional advice?
Yes, well, I was very worried about it, and so the other night I was going to ring the problem phone in on LBC, but I couldn't because it clashed with the midweek cup replay on Radio 2.
Oh, right, yeah. Onwards?
Yeah.
And now it's time for our science fiction story. This week...
The day time went backwards.
This is such an incredible story. I keep thinking that it must be some terrible nightmare and that I'll wake up and everything will be okay again. But it won't. Nothing will ever be the same again. Not since that fateful Saturday afternoon. It was just an ordinary Saturday afternoon. Children were playing in the park. Weekend shoppers were milling through the streets. And Vinnie Jones had been sent off playing for Wimbledon. I lay on the sofa enjoying my day off. Suddenly the phone rang.
Parker, it's me, Tremlett.
Tremlett was my boss.
Why the hell aren't you at work?
But it's Saturday.
What are you talking about, man? It's Friday. Now get in here immediately.
I felt such a fool. How could I have made such an idiotic mistake? I ran to the tube station, bought a ticket, and headed for the automated ticket barrier. 3 hours later, I was through the barrier and on the platform. Not bad. Perhaps my luck was changing. A train arrived. I got on. Soon I was rushing into the office of the Sun newspaper, where I worked on the news desk as a long words remover. My boss spotted me.
All right, Parker, that's it. You're fired.
What?
This is the second Thursday in a row you've been late.
But it's Friday. You said so yourself on the phone.
Don't talk nonsense. Collect your cards and go.
I couldn't believe what was happening to me. I literally didn't know what day it was. I was cracking up. I had to talk to someone. I went to my girlfriend's flat. I'd only met Sarah a few days earlier, but already we felt very close. Sarah, you won't believe what's happened. I've been fired.
Who are you?
What?
Who are you?
Sarah, it's me, Dave. Dave, we met 3 nights ago. I wiped the spit off your face at the Beastie Boys concert, remember?
The Beastie Boys concert is tomorrow.
Sarah, let me in. Sarah kept screaming hysterically, so I ran, my brain spinning. I found myself in the high street, and suddenly I spotted my best friend, Jeff, who also worked at the Sun as a breast enhancer. Jeff!
Hi, Dave. I can't stop now in the middle of my Christmas shopping.
Daddy!
Okay, son.
Christmas shopping?
Yes, I've left it all to Christmas Eve as usual.
Daddy!
Yes, okay, son. He wants me to get him a Chief Constable James Anderton doll. It walks, it talks, it hears voices. See you, Dave. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Jeff. Christmas in February. Sarah not knowing me. I sat on a bench and tried to make sense of it all. There were only two possible explanations. Either I was going insane or... time was travelling backwards. That was it. I dashed back to the offices of the Sun. Hold the front page! Time is going backwards!
What?
It's the biggest story ever! Somehow, time has been reversed!
Rubbish, it hasn't.
It has!
It hasn't. I bet you 3 shillings and 6 pence. Time going backwards. Still, it's good copy. We'll print it.
But it's true!
Never mind, we'll print it anyway. Just one question. Who the hell are you?
I left his office. I was tired, very tired. I found a park bench and fell asleep, wondering what the morning would hold in store. I woke to the sound of the tremolos. A man walked by holding a radio. My face felt the cool breeze created by his flares. I was wet through from the rain. I took off my sopping shirt, bought a t-shirt depicting Lord Kitchener, and dried off in Carnaby Street. Slowly, I realized the full horror of what had happened. In just one night, time had traveled back 20 years, taking the whole world back to the 1960s and Wales to the 1830s. And the whole terrifying process seemed to be accelerating. One vital question was gnawing at my brain. Why wasn't I traveling backwards in time too? Why was I immune to this reversal? Was it some significant biological factor that protected me? Or was it just a convenient narrative device to keep the story moving? My thoughts were interrupted by the sound of cheering. World War II had ended. 5 minutes later, it began. Then a policeman arrested me for wearing treasonous clothing, which ridiculed Lord Kitchener. At the police station, they threw me in a back room and beat me up. In a funny way, I was relieved at least some things weren't changing. I drifted off into unconsciousness. I don't know how long I was out, but the next thing I knew, I was awoken by the roar of a brontosaurus. I was in prehistoric times now, A pterodactyl swooped low over me. And a Tyrannosaurus Rex was quietly filing his nails and eating a salad. Boy, I thought, were we wrong about him? Suddenly, a squat, hairy Neanderthal figure leapt down out of the trees. Now I was really confused. Was this still prehistoric times, or was I back at the sun? A feeling of panic swept over me. If time was hurtling back as fast as this, any moment now we would reach the moment of the Earth's creation. The world would be uncreated. I braced myself, waiting for the moment of creation turned destruction. The Big Bang. Suddenly, the cataclysmic Big Bang arrived. We were wrong about that, too. Everything was the same as before. The Neanderthal slouched towards me, his spear raised aggressively. I prayed he would kill me, end this misery, and somehow get me out of this incredibly complicated plot.
That's it for this week. Next week, is Elvis Presley really dead? We'll be talking to the man who really knows, Elvis Presley.
And on the new films front, we'll be reviewing the remake of the sci-fi classic The Incredible Shrinking Man, in which the hero shrinks down to microscopic size and ends up becoming Minister for Sport. Good night.
Good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Leslie Sharp and Jasper Jacobs. It was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.